This audio is the Organising the Unorganised session of the Dublin Anarchist Book Fair 2013. In the session, we look at some practical examples and lessons to be learned from two union organising drives among the unorganised. You will find more audio from the Dublin Anarchist Book Fair at www.wsn.ie/anarchist-bookfair.
Okay, folks. Welcome to the second session of meetings in the Anarchist Book Fair. This session is called Organising the Unorganised, Some Practical Examples. The two lads will introduce themselves just briefly. On my left is Dave Pike, who's going to speak on solidarity unionism in Pizza Hut. And on my right, Deca Keenan, who's going to speak on solidarity union organising in the IWW in both the US and Canada. Just for people's information, this session has been recorded on audio, just so people know. And we will also, and Jimmy's already at it, working hard there, we'll be handing out feedback forms. If people can complete them and give them back, they would be of great help for organising future book fairs. There's two sections to the forms, one just on feedback, and the second part is if you're interested in becoming a contact or getting involved at some level with the WSM in the future, you can fill out your whatever it asks in that section. So both speakers are going to speak for about 20 minutes, and then we'll take hopefully about 20 minutes from the floor. Take it away, Dave.
Sweet.
I'll start with that.
Go
for it.
Hi, so as I've just been introduced, I'm Dave, an organiser for the IWW. For those of you who don't know what the IWW is, the IWW is the Industrial Workers of the World. It's been a international trade union since 1905. Just checking. based around grassroots democracy and workplaces, and built around an anti-capitalist approach as well. There's a lot more to it than that, obviously, but I'll just keep it brief because I've only got 20 minutes. So just to introduce myself, I'm a pizza delivery driver, one of those idiots on mopeds that you see bumming it around, and I'm also an organiser for the IWW, and a gobby opinionated shit as well, but that's beside the point. So just as an introduction to what working for pizza is like, I mean, I'm sure we've all had jobs like it, you know, well, most of us have had jobs like it, depends what kind of salary you're born with, I guess, but you know, it's the minimum wage work where everything is minimum, you know, not just minimum wage, but minimum health and safety, minimum rules about everything from management's attitudes to discrimination in the workplace. Everything is a minimum, absolute bare minimum. I worked there myself for about 10 years on and off. It was essentially my first job, and then funnily enough, despite finishing uni, you know, it was the job I went back to, and I'm still in, you know, and who says there isn't jobs for life anymore? You know, if you're working at pizza, there is. You know, I'd always been politically active, but not at work. I'd always been seeing myself as like an activist, I guess. You know, I'd been on student demos, I'd been on anti-war demos, but I'd never thought that my workplace had anything to do with that activism. That was despite being a member of the Socialist Party for many years and being active in the Socialist Party. No one ever thought to encourage me to do anything at work. There was never anyone saying, you work for one of the most profitable companies in the world, you should probably do something about that. No one ever thought to encourage me, despite my political inexperience, that was maybe a good idea. My first experience, though, was actually while I was working for a different company. But in fact, that political attitude that I had at work became such a thing that my manager in Pizza Hut actually discussed it as like, oh, isn't it funny, Dave's that political guy in our shop? And she even put a poster up, a picture up for me that was in the newspaper of me getting nicked at a Liberal Democrat party conference. And she thought, oh, isn't it funny, Dave's political, you know, look, isn't it funny he's the political one? Not laughing anymore, mind, but, you know, that was at the time. You know, and I think there was a particular moment in my workplace when I was actually speaking to someone that I worked with. He was pretty new to the job, he'd only been there about a month, and he was asking me, he said, you know, well, what do we get for working bank holidays? And I was like, oh, nothing, And he was just like, "You're kidding me, you don't get anything extra for working bank holidays." I was like, "No, we haven't in about 8 years." And he was like, "And no one's doing anything about it." And I was like, "No, no." And then it was just like, "Well, why aren't we doing something about it? You know, we're all pretty good mates. You know, we can all stick up for each other. I've been here for years. You know, I'm willing to shout at my manager about it." And it actually was a moment where I was just, well, of course I should be doing something at work. And I think for me that was a really important moment of realising the actual practical applications of the politics I've been talking about for so many years. And I've been on so many marches and protests, and I spoke about supporting workers in different workplaces. What about my work? I was working for minimum wage. I wasn't in a cushy job by any stretch of the imagination. I was in the service industry where there's an absolute core of organising needs to be done. But I was unbelievably inexperienced when I started approaching this. And I think a really good phrase for describing that moment in organising is organising like a superhero. You basically, I'll organise this and I'll fix this problem. I'll fix all these issues in work. And it's the kind of approach that, unfortunately, in my opinion, having shop stewards and stuff actually encourages, because it creates a situation where we have one person who fixes everyone's problems. That one person becomes the go-to person for all of your problems in work. And I became that go-to person. And unsurprisingly, after about 2 months, I was exhausted. There's a lot of fucking problems in Pizza Hut. You know, wages being from the start, you know, and not just something that one person can sort out. And to me, actually, it was also a realisation that organising is that. Organising is making a series of fuck-ups and realising how not to do it, rather than the other way around. And in fact, my first real experience was organising in a call centre in a different job. And getting sacked after a day of organising. It was a pretty respectful spate of organising there, because I went to a mainstream trade union and said, "I want to organise in this call centre, the conditions are really crappy." And the guy from GMB, which is a mainstream trade union in England, turned around to me and went, "Great, right, bring me a load of these membership forms back when you've got them filled in." Just gave me a pile of membership forms and a roll of GMB branded pens and sent me on my way. Unsurprisingly, when I started giving them out of work, I got sacked. And this is the kind of attitude that a different approach to organising is needed for. And so what we organise around in the IWW is not about organising for recognition, although obviously that can be someone's decision if they want to go for recognition. It's not about organising to get someone elected as a shop steward. It's about organising to build solidarity in the workplace. And we do that by taking a sort of different approach. And this is where solidarity unionism comes in for me. And it's through this method that we build what we call the workplace committee. This workplace committee is based around the idea that you don't just get one person to sort out the problems. You get a group of people, you know. I mean, it's impossible to say that every single person in the workplace is going to be as committed as the next, because that's just not the reality. You get some people who are less interested, some people who are supportive, some people who are pretty neutral to it, but you get some people who are really committed, and it's about building up a committee of those committed people. And not just because it's the thing we should do, and it's not just because it feels right that we should have more than one person doing it, it's because it works. And it definitely changed the direction of things in Pizza Hut when we started doing that that way. Because up until that point, I was basically driving myself into the ground for exhaustion. And luckily, I was really good friends with everyone I worked with. And it was a pretty small shop, so I could turn around to everyone else and just say, "Look, I'm driving myself crazy here. Other people need to start doing work as well." And people took me up on that, and it changed the attitudes in the workplace. And so it becomes about building confidence among those people, not just the people who are most committed, but those who are slightly committed, those who are neutral, and building up an attitude in workplace of small victories and getting those small victories through direct action. It's not about getting small victories through writing a letter to the boss every time. It's not about small victories about following company procedure every time, although sometimes that does have its place, and it is important to sometimes think about that as well. But for example, we dealt with health and safety issues through direct action. For years, the oven gloves that we got given fell apart after maybe a week. Holes in them, people getting burns all the way up their arms. I mean, anyone who's worked in a kitchen can tell these stories about burns they've got all over themselves from that. And we dealt with that by throwing them in the bin every time they tore. And so they had to replace them. We dealt with broken bike equipment by smashing it to bits so it couldn't be used anymore. So helmets, for example, when they were slightly cracked, where they normally just tell us to keep on using them, we just threw them into the car park and smashed them into bits. You know, and it's that kind of approach, that using direct action to deal with things that, if you listen to the mainstream trade unions, the only way to deal with that is through applying your legal rights and applying to the legal minimums that we're told are the only way to get these things done. The way to get it done is through direct action. I mean, it's a classic IWW saying, but direct action gets the goods, and it does, because we all got new bike helmets and we all got new oven gloves. And it does get the goods. And it's not, and for me as well, and through the solidarity unionism model, it's not just about building the union straight off the bat, and it's not just about building that union membership straight away. Although obviously that is the aim, that's not where you start with. You start by building solidarity in the workplace, and through solidarity the union forms, not the other way around. And especially when it comes to working in the service industry, where you've got a lot of young workers. I remember the first time we started talking to people about unions, when I mentioned unions, most of the people who were in there thought I was talking about students' union, because that is the kind of experience level we're talking about here. This is like 17 and 18 year olds who have never engaged with politics, never mind workplace organising. So to talk about unions is just completely unfounded. And so you're having to start completely from scratch. And starting from scratch means starting with solidarity. And that's expanding, what people understand as the people they support. So it's not about the U word right away. In fact, if anything, the way we do it through our organiser training is encouraging people to just avoid talking about it until you're at a level where people are supporting each other. Because, you know, that if they're not doing that, there's no point in them being a member of the union. Because that's the basics that we're talking about. So it's about developing solidarity outside of what people normally expect as far as supporting people around them. So it's about expanding it beyond just the job that they're doing, or beyond just their shop. And to be honest, the main focus is actually getting over those boundaries that we see every day around us. So race and sex, and getting across those boundaries as well. In fact, actually, to be honest, that becomes the main focus. So dealing with racism and sexism in the workplace, not just because it's the right thing to do, but because it works. And unless you cross those boundaries in the workplace through organising and through building solidarity, then you're not going to have solidarity and you're not going to have organising in the workplace. And so the proudest moment for me, in fact, was a couple of occasions. One where I've spoken to a fellow worker involved, and she doesn't mind me speaking about this, but where a manager had basically sexually assaulted another member of staff, one of our members, in fact. And the amazing reaction we got from other members who were involved in that situation about dealing with it through direct action and dealing through it as a group rather than individuals dealing with it like that. And the response was fantastic. And that was one of the proudest moments for me as an organiser of Pizza, was seeing the reaction that people had to that. And then again was expanding people's idea of solidarity to not just the people they work with day to day, but other workers. And when there was massive public sector strikes in England, when workers came out from Pizza Hut and went out and supported strikes and went out and supported picket lines, you know, that was seeing that solidarity coming to life, not just in the most basic sense of supporting the person who's on the machine next to you, who's on the make table next to you, who's delivering a pizza just next to you. It's about supporting, getting that idea of solidarity way beyond that. Again, coming back to the model of organising that we use, we talk about this idea that really, we don't want people joining the union when they just see solidarity expanding just to the person next to them. You want them joining the union when they see solidarity expanding to the global working class. That is the ultimate aim, obviously. So for us, although obviously we'd had smaller victories, the big moment for us is where we had a picket outside a workplace, and the support we received for that was amazing. We had international support from IWW members and members of Solfed and members of other organisations coming out in support of us and having pickets outside their local Pizza Hut to support what we were doing. And as a result of that, we won a pay rise in a company that's never even spoken to unions before. And what that did is ultimately, as well as getting us the pay rise, it brought Pizza Hut to the table. because they were embarrassed that Peace Rutts all over the world were having these pickets saying support Peace Rutt workers outside of them. And we had this meeting with the CEO of Peace Rutt Delivery, Aaron. I can't remember his last name, but it was something double barrel, anyway. So. And he told me his big story for me when I spoke to him about what we wanted was, you know, he goes, I don't like this whole surf and master approach you've got. Did you know when I was at university, my hero was Che Guevara? I was just like, is this guy for real? You know, like, what planet is this guy? But anyway, you know, it was that kind of attitude that we come up against. And actually, that attitude in management was actually our biggest hurdle. Our biggest hurdle wasn't the quick turnover of staff. The biggest hurdle wasn't the fact that they're minimum wage workers or that they're students or maybe they're young so they're not as interested in organising. But was the fact that in Pizza Hut and across the service sector, you have what's often described as a family-style management, or what Liberty Lock and Organised with Starbucks actually described as an abusive relationship. And I think it's a very accurate description. Because at one moment you have your managers basically telling you about wage cuts or cuts in conditions or how they're getting massive bonuses and huge payouts where everyone else is getting minimum wage, and with the other hand offering to take everyone out for a night out or acting as if they're everyone's best mate. And that is the biggest problem, is that managers, because people don't see any sort of class, because there isn't any class consciousness developed in these industries and in these workplaces, people just say, oh, this is just my manager, it's just someone else, it's just a normal person. But the reality is, they make huge bonuses out of the hard work that us in the service industry have to do. Not to mention the fact that we're also working for a company that's making humongous profits and expanding all over the world. And so for me, the real big victories were breaking down those boundaries, breaking down people's ideas of what the manager was, and that it wasn't just someone's best mate, and that they weren't just your friend, and that they were an instrument of the company controlling each and every one of us. And changing the attitudes in workplace to each other was the biggest victory. Because what we saw is, actually, one of the biggest problems in our workplaces were people just weren't getting breaks. Because people felt guilty about going out on a break because they wanted to support the next person there with them. And it was changing those attitudes in work. So it wasn't about supporting each other to work harder. It was about supporting each other to get the things that we deserve. And so it became supporting each other so that each person could get out on a break, so everyone could have their 20 minutes or whatever. And making sure that people actually took 20 minutes and not 5 minutes. So changing attitudes in workplace. That was the real big victory. And then bringing up those people who are in the workplace committee and encouraging them to become more active. And now we have people from Pizza Hut who are active throughout the IWW. But not just in the IWW, but in campaigns that are going on all over Sheffield or in York or in other places where we've got Pizza Hut branches. And the message for me from this and the experience that it's given me and that I will always try and pass on to other people when I'm talking about this is that organising in a workplace isn't about headline grabbing. It isn't about easy wins, and it isn't about all that stuff. What it's about is about hard work, and it's about being involved in the day-to-day graft that is the life of the working class. And it is about organising around those things, and it's about education for those people and developing that. So I think the message that I'd really like to give to you is that if you want to organise in these workplaces, and if you want to see organising happening in, not just in the service sector, but in unorganised workplaces across the board, it's about putting in the hard work and giving that support to those workers and that. And it isn't just about swinging by and dropping in a couple of flyers. It's about being part of people's lives on a day-to-day basis and developing those kind of attitudes of solidarity between you if you're working there and other people who are out there supporting you, because that's what organising is about. And I guess that's everything for me, I think. Cheers.
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, after Dave, you know, I'm going to get whisper. I doubt that you're all kind of riled up and you're already here. Just like go out there, enjoy the wobs, and organise your workplace, your precarious workplace. So I'll bring it down a bit because it's going to be slightly, I hasten to add, academic. Because it's the basis of some academic research that I undertook quite recently. And it was into solidarity unionism as an organising model of the industrial workers of the world, primarily in the United States and Canada. I don't know Max, so I'm going to press that button and hope for the best. Jesus. Okay, so I'm going to talk about what is solidarity unionism, because the stuff that Dave was talking about is essentially the solidarity union model. Okay, that's what. Did you actually mention solidarity union when I'm...
Vaguely, I think, yeah.
Right, okay, good stuff. What a team. The solidarity union model. Now, we would all say we're solidarity kind of union kind of people, because solidarity is a really big, important thing on the left, isn't it? Yeah, solidarity, this, that, and the other. We've got a union called Solidarity now, run by fascists, right? Everybody loves the solidarity term. We've got a party in Scotland where I'm based called Solidarity. There's an organisation called the Workers' Solidarity Movement. Yeah, you might have heard of those guys. So solidarity is big. So what do we mean by solidarity unionism? Isn't every union sort of activity that is based on solidarity a form of solidarity unionism? Well, possibly not. I looked specifically at where solidarity unionism came from. And I'd ask the question, has anybody heard of a writer called Stoughton Lind? Anybody at all? Oh, fantastic, just makes stuff up now. Brilliant. Right, no, but seriously, a book came out in 1992, which is just here behind me, a very slim volume called Solidarity Unionism, Rebuilding the Labour Movement from Below. And Stoughton Lind had been a union organiser to some extent, but mostly a guy that had been involved in prison solidarity work, he'd been involved in the civil rights movement and so forth. And the book essentially described a new kind of vision for unionism in the United States in particular. And there were three defining characteristics. One was the union as rank and file. Okay, so basically, it stands and falls on its membership activity. Yeah. So what the union does is what the union is. There's no separate layer of organisation from the shop floor, as it were. Yeah. So that's one of them. Secondly, it's based on a direct action approach rather than mediated action that requires the involvement of outside bodies, political organisations and so forth. Thirdly, mobility of membership. This is an important thing within the context of the United States because essentially union membership is greatly dependent upon where you work. If you work in a specific workplace, you get to join the union. Yeah? And if you don't, if you aren't, then it's not something that you tend to get involved in because they won't recruit you. Okay, that's just been the model. Now, the only organisation that's kind of bucked that trend historically has been the Industrial Workers of the World. So those are the three main things. But I would also add two others that I think are really, really important. One is the emphasis on building power in the workplace, which is a lot of what Dave was saying. And not about winning exclusive bargaining rights. Okay, so it's not recognition as the first and foremost project, or the first and foremost aim, as it were. I'd also say that solidarity unionism tends to be explicitly class antagonistic, right? The preamble of the Industrial Workers of the World says that the working class and the employing class have nothing in common. Right, that's a good kind of starting point for a class antagonistic kind of unionism, I think people would agree. Okay, so when I was doing my research, I mostly spoke to people, which I think is a good idea, and I mostly spoke to organisers, but I did read some stuff as well, and I'd recommend that you read stuff as well in this area if you're interested. A really good place to find out about solidarity unionism, what it's about, and how it's done, which is the important thing, is in the actual Industrial Worker, which is the monthly newspaper of the IWW. Okay, the IWW tends to have a lot of its kind of semi-internal debates openly. Okay, so that's a really good source. And another excellent source, I'll ask you, has anybody ever heard of Recomposition? Notes for a New Workerism. Absolutely fantastic website. It's basically IWW organisers on the ground developing a kind of a union praxis, as it were, through experience and theory. Really exciting website. Do you ever visit it, Dave?
Mm-hmm. All the time.
It's never off it. It's damn good. Okay, so where does it kind of take place, this solidarity unionism, this kind of non-representational, if you like, unionism? Well, mostly in the service sector, mostly in non-unionised places, mostly in places that the mainstream unions wouldn't really particularly want to put a lot of emphasis on organising because it's too expensive, really, and other reasons. The most famous is probably your Starbucks Workers Union. In New York, started off in 2004 and now is kind of an international phenomenon. The Jimmy John's Workers' Unions in the Twin Cities, which is a quite recent one. Canadian Union of Postal Workers, Joel Carley in Edmonton, okay, Edmonton in Canada, right, which is an example of solidarity unionising by IWW members within a mainstream union, albeit the CUPW is the equivalent in Canada of something like the RMT, right? So it's kind of a social movement union, quite militant, attracts a lot of kind of social movement type stuff. The Seattle Solidarity Network. Has anybody heard of Seattle Solidarity Network? Yeah? Okay. Right. Quite famous in the United States, if not in this room at least, organisation. That takes kind of a solidarity union model and modified it a little bit, and we can maybe talk about that another time, maybe a bit later today. But that was actually established by the IWW. And finally, I talked to people in the hotel and restaurant workers in Portland, Oregon, which is a kind of a less well-known solidarity union initiative. Okay, so what does solidarity unionism look like? Well, they use the model of AEIOU. So agitate, educate, inoculate, organise and union. So the agitate is basically, well, we know what agitation's about, but particularly the idea of agitational conversation, where you engage people in conversation about what's pissing them off at work, basically, yeah, and take it from there. We could do it on a one-to-one basis, maybe two-to-one basis, and in the training that the union organised, they put a lot of emphasis on this kind of one-to-one kind of building of relationships. And it's actually, that's been a lot mainstreamed in unions as well in the last 10 years. Educate, basically, that doesn't mean like in a kind of didactic kind of way. It means educate people, let people know about what the union has done in the past, what organising has done in the past, what kind of small victories have been won and so forth. Inoculate, which is something I've never heard in the union movement before, but it's the idea of basically getting your retaliation in first and stopping people being won over to the management position because it's a red union that's trying to organise them, and it is a red union that's trying to organise them. Right, so kind of getting that in first, inoculating them against this kind of propaganda from the bosses. Organise, right, and before union, yeah, organise, actually take an organising initiative, usually in the form of formulating an organising committee in a workplace, getting that committee to formulate some sort of basic stuff that they want to do, things they want to see changed, and then doing it, right? And sometimes that is kind of simultaneous with signing people up to the union, and sometimes that comes before people are actually formally joining the union. So people get an idea of what's possible with some really basic organisation, and then they'll join the union. So good examples of things that the IWW have done, particular job branches have done, are things like Starbucks workers were really sweating a little bit like I am under the lights just now, and the management wouldn't allow them to have a fan, a very basic thing, so they agitated around this, and then eventually they just, like, in a lunch break went out and got a fan, covered it in union kind of stuff, IWW fan and all the rest of it, brought it in. It was all the management could see it, all the punters could see it in Starbucks. And they very quickly found themselves with an industrial strength fan for their cooling down. Sort of very simple, very basic thing, small victory, you know, that gets built upon. Also in the hotel industry, schedules were going up every week for the following week. So what workers would do in an organised way, is like take them down, rewrite them, and put them back up that suited them, right, their childcare and all the rest of it, yeah? And it was a kind of a war of attrition between them and the bosses, but mostly they won. Okay? So, small stuff, but like making a big change to people's life. And one of the organisers that I spoke with, who had been involved in this kind of hotel stuff, he said this about what solidarity unionism actually felt like. And that was one of my questions. What does it kind of feel like when you're doing it? And he said that you can read it yourself. It's life-changing. Having the experience of coming together with your co-workers and fighting for your demands in front of your boss is life-changing. Yeah. So this is what I heard from a lot of organisers. I've been involved in the trade union movement for about 25 years. Right, and I've never heard organisers really talk about what they were doing in these kind of totally emphatic, liberating kind of ways. Yeah, just the real sense of, I hate the word, but empowerment. A real sense of people actually doing things, being creative, making things work, and not having to deal with shit and bureaucracy all the time to actually get things done. Okay, so it feels good, apparently.
Yeah. Can talk to that.
Okay, but there are issues, right? And this is the kind of academic thing that comes in here. You've got to sort of like tear things apart a bit and out like that. There are issues, yeah? And the IWW are very aware of what those issues are, I think. Haven't solved all of them, but I think they're trying to. There's a very high expectation on membership, yeah? That actually isn't what it's supposed to say, expectation rather than the membership. Well, we're all like, kind of like that. But it's expectation of a very high level of commitment and engagement from membership, right? So every member is an organiser. That's one of the slogans of the IWW. But that can be quite problematic in some ways and quite difficult for some people, yeah, to be organisers because of all kinds of different circumstances. Sustaining member involvement. So you have a struggle, you kind of build up for it, you win, or you perhaps don't win, and then kind of things die down again. What do you do then? How do you sustain and maintain membership interest and engagement? The development of an activist and member divide. So you're always going to get people that want to be more active in it, that can find more time to do things that are more kind of mad keen, basically. And how do they stop becoming this kind of unofficial bureaucracy? Yeah, this kind of unofficial leadership, as it were, and also limited composition, social composition, that is, in terms of like the majority of workers, not all, but the majority of workers being organised in the solidarity union models are precarious, greatly immigrant, very low income groups. Okay, so not the kind of mainstream of American and Canadian labour. So partly how they would deal with this, and we can talk about this later as well, is that if you've got a no-dependency culture, well, that's just what it is, isn't it? Right? If you don't do it, if your branch isn't going to do it on a collective basis, it isn't going to get done. The regional organiser just isn't going to be able to do it for you. They'll help, but they're not going to do it for you. Okay? The bureaucracy, as it were, isn't there, so they can't be relied upon to make things right. You don't call people in. Yeah? You're it. Accountability. It's very much a human scale because it's small. You can do this with 2,000 members. You know, the question is, can you kind of do it with more than that? Recallable delegates and all the usual kind of stuff. Not in an absolutely horizontal model, but more horizontal than most unions. Mentoring. People get mentored in the IWW. Yeah, if people join the IWW, a lot of branches get a buddy system going, yeah, and so you're actually encouraged to learn more, to find out more, to self-educate and so forth. Building a community and culture outside of the workplace, kind of a wobbly culture, this kind of sense of identification with the union, as it were. And training for all, right, so going back to this everyone's an organiser, the idea that everybody has the right and is actually encouraged to get the training, yeah. And trained to be an organiser and other kinds of training too. And most branches in the United States have a kind of a official or an unofficial policy, it appears, to get everybody who has joined trained up within one calendar year. Okay. Interesting stuff. Also, I want to know what success looked like in solidarity unionism. Right, very nice. fire through this. So the organisers that I spoke to, they did say, yeah, if it's not making material gains, then it's not working. You know, it has to make material gains. You have to win shit. Their words. I never swear. Membership engagement in itself, getting people totally mobilised and into something is a victory in itself. Building the movement, a lot of organisers talked about, they have this vision that it's a movement that has to be rebuilt. Okay, and it's in a small way that it's starting to rebuild the movement at grassroots level. Developing militants, yeah? So basically getting people experienced. And if they do get the sacking, do you know what? Sometimes people do get the sack when they're doing this kind of unionism. Then that they're prepared for the next fight, as it were. Yeah. And even just the process itself is a kind of a success to get people actually doing things for themselves for a change. So that's kind of how people verbalise that. I will get this right. So mainstreaming, and I think we could talk about that maybe rather than me talk about it too much just now because I've only got like 2.5 minutes. But a lot of organisers talk about the threat and opportunity of mainstreaming. And by mainstreaming, I mean like using solidarity union models in the wider labour movement. Okay, so there's a lot of threat and opportunity. Some United States unions are beginning to look at solidarity union models, and specifically kind of the idea of a minority unionism. Some of the unions involved in the stuff that was going on in Wisconsin, for example, last year, the Madison, Wisconsin stuff, have started to talk about like how we could use solidarity union models to actually rebuild, as it were. Possibility of instrumentalist adoption. So there you go. Also, direct action without the politics. It's okay to kind of get things done, but if you're not actually getting political education happening as well, then that can be problematic. And actually, for a lot of the organisers that I spoke to, this mainstreaming idea was the big issue. The big issue, yeah? Because, as I said before, it's fine if you've got 2,000 members to do this kind of stuff. How do you make it mass? Yeah? And finally, I spoke to a guy called Daniel Gross, who's a Starbucks union organiser. And there's a picture of him getting arrested. and what he said, it sounded very profound at the time. But he said, you know, I said, well, you know, how are we going to know if this stuff works? Yeah. And he said, you've got to prove you can do it. In 100 years, we'll see if we're full of shit or not. I'd like to think we'd see if we're full of shit even sooner than that. Yeah. I'd like to see that happen. Other than that, that's it really, and we'll open the floor to questions.
We get to the end, okay? We bring we both a chance to finish at the end, okay? Okay, we don't have much time. We have about 20 minutes, so we'll open to the floor for questions, contributions. We'll take a few contributions and then maybe let the lads back in, if that's okay. Kevin.
I'd just like to ask about the IWW. Are still sectionalists, Scott? What I mean by that, James Connolly was organiser in New York for the Wobblies Builders section. Mm-hmm. And by sectionalism, it meant if one group of workers are in struggle, i.e., bricklayers, if we have the whole building section, that would lead on to building related trades. So on and so forth, until you've got the general strike, for example, if pizza workers are in trouble, you can call out bakers, dairies because of the cheese, so on and so forth, transport. Does it still operate on that kind of mode?
We'll take a few and we'll come back if that's okay, lads. I'll keep a record. Unless we don't, assuming we've someone else who wishes. Okay, we'll go just back the hall. You all put up hands at the same time. Okay, this man here.
I thought the talk was very interesting. I do a lot of union organising myself, and some of the more practical stuff is quite interesting. But in the past, did a lot of picketing and flying pickets and things like that. How do you deal with that now? Because it's illegal to have a picket of more than 6 people and things like that. So, what do you pose as a protest, for example, or how do you deal with that? And one of the other things that would I'd like to ask about is with these this kind of solidarity unionism. I mean, I found it very problematic, the idea of every member an organiser, because they're not organisers, and you know, you kind of sometimes you have to identify a leader or a certain amount of leaders and get them to organise in the workplace and then have support from the outside. Now it's fine to say, listen, nothing's going to happen unless you just get working, but at the same time I think we need to be quite pragmatic about it as well, because if we don't get them organised, nothing is going to happen, full stop, you know. So how do you encourage people to keep up that momentum, or do they just not keep it up?
This man here, yeah.
What's the relationship to the larger unions?
Okay, and then the chap there, yeah.
Yeah, I just agree with lots of stuff you're saying, organising the workplace, but I think we maybe put a shift in 100 years' time, you know, much bigger pictures are built from the grassroots of the union, specifically the organisers of the unions. And I do realise everybody may not want to be an organiser, or may not even have the skills to be an organiser. Mm-hmm. I think the main problem, and our, I just want to deal with this, because I know the union we're in are pushing for it now at the moment, to take on the present leadership of the trade union movement, specifically, and the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, and I'm sure that's true all around the world, that you have an elite section who are collaborating with governments throughout the world, the oppression of workers, and although, like when you talk about yourself, the teacher hopes they've been on the minimum wage, they are very, very important issues, and not to minimise them by anything whatsoever. But there's much bigger issues out there, like health, education, cutbacks, the household charges, water charges. I'm sure every country around the world have much bigger issues. But the trade unions, I mean, the perfect example of something of this is that they enter partnership with government. To be a socialist and a trade union, you cannot be in a partnership with your enemy. Mm-hmm. You, so basically, you have your set of principles, you go with them, and there's no negotiating on them. Like, we see what's happening to the four-party agreement here in our own country at the moment. These things are not over negotiation. I mean, these issues are black and white. So it's how the way, in my own opinion, I think it's a bit wrong union, is that the present structure of the trade union movement in Ireland has to be totally and 100% dismantled. The likes of the leaders of the trade union have to be brought down, and there has to be an alternative. And I'd agree with, I'm sorry, I can't think of the chap's name, but I met the last speaker. I agree with him, not 20 years' time. Now, that process has to start now, and my question being ultimately, how are we going to achieve it?
Thanks.
What are you doing with it?
Okay, we'll just take Eve and then we'll come back to the two lads. Just a reminder, if anyone doesn't have a feedback form yet, get Jimmy's attention there and either give them back to him at the end or leave them on the seats and we'll collect them. Thanks.
I was just wondering if you have any examples of the IWW being involved in organising more casualised workers who maybe not in a more permanent kind of job but who are moving around doing different kind of casual work. I'm an archaeologist and that's kind of the work I do, and there's a lot of there's some interesting developments in trying to organise casual labourers in the archaeology sector at the moment, so I'd be interested in some kind of practical examples or comments.
Okay. Who wants to go?
What was the first one?
The first one was the sectionalism, Kev's question on the IWW and sectionalism.
Yeah, can people hear if I just speak like this? Yeah. I think the answer is to the question, and the question being, do we still organise on an industrial basis? Yes. Yes, it is. So it's one union for an industry and one big union overall, right? So the idea is to... And a very good example would be something like Pizza Hut or one of the fast food chains like Jimmy John's or whatever, right, is that you try and organise all the way down the chain, right? So it's the bakers, the people doing that, it's the people that are delivering the stuff to the stores, it's the people in the stores, it's the people that are, like, eating the stuff, yeah, as well, yeah? So that is something that, like, particularly, I think I had a slide here. See this IWW Food and Retail Workers Union, right? So that's bringing together three kind of like industrial unions within the IWW to work together on this kind of basis of organising right down the kind of food chain, as it were. Yeah, so certainly, yeah.
Flying pickets, Dave?
Yeah, I think I'll try and answer both your questions, if that's all right. Like, the legal questions are, to be honest, when we had the picket at Pizza, I think we had like 20 plus people on it. Mm. To a certain extent, you can get away with just breaking most of those laws. You know, my personal opinion is mainstream trade unions spend way too much of their time worrying about the legal niceties of every single little topic and constantly worrying like, oh, we don't want to bend this bit of law here and that bit of law there. But I think that also comes from the fact that they rely on the law to solve all of their problems. Because they rely on the law to solve all of their problems, they're already thinking in a legalistic manner, so they need to know all the bits here and the bits here and the bits here. So you need to take an approach that just where, to be honest, as far as possible, you ignore it. But I think a good way of thinking about it is that someone else told me this one. I didn't make this one up myself, so I'm not going to claim to it. But where possible, the law is your shield and direct action is your sword. You know, when it comes to attacking the bosses, don't worry about what the law is. Just do what you can for the amount of members that you have active, for the scale of the conflict that you're in. You know, because the reality is, as anyone who's organising a workplace, I'm sure can talk to, is the fact is, if you have enough people organising a workplace pissed off about a certain thing, it doesn't fucking matter what the law says, because you can change it by using direct action and by forcing the boss's hand. You know, it's always important to know where you're standing legally. Mm. It's definitely important to realise when you are breaking the law rather than just doing it, but at the same time, not to think too much of it. And then to talk to your question about how we try and build that, because it isn't... I tried to talk to him, I can't remember if you were in for that bit, but I tried to talk to him a bit about it in my talk, because the reality is we build around this idea of a workplace committee, so you do have leaders in a workplace. You know, and I don't think there's... My opinion is I don't think there's any hiding that, or you risk putting yourself in a bad position, I think, if you do. Because some people in a workplace are more gobby than others. Some people in a workplace are more encouraging and are more trusted in a workplace, often for perfectly good reasons. Most, you know, I think in my experience, most of the time, someone who's a leader in a workplace is a leader in a workplace for a good reason. Because they've been there the longest, because they're the oldest person there, because they're nice to everyone at work. People trust them and go to them with their problems. And so it's encouraging that in a more radical direction. So it's encouraging that leadership in the workplace to create a radical working class strength in that workplace through leadership and through a leadership of a workplace committee.
I think it's also like an ethos, because what you're saying about like not everybody can be, well, you wouldn't actually in a sense want everybody necessarily being an organiser per se. It's more like a culture, it's an ethos, yeah. Right? Mainstream unions for the most part don't say to people, right, what we're going to do is like make everybody an organiser. Yeah, that's our slogan, everybody an organiser, yeah? So it's an ethos that's kind of being used there. Some people, their strengths might not be organising, they might be administrative, for example. So you utilise people's strengths, right? But the other thing is, getting everybody to take the organiser training, for example, means that everybody knows what the hell's going on and how things are being organised and why they're being organised in the way they are. Yeah, so that's the kind of thing. It's not that literally everybody will go out and say, yeah, I'm the organiser for this place, because you build on the natural kind of occurring leaderships. And also, you do call on other people as well in the union, okay? But what you don't call on other people to do is to solve the problem. You call on other people to bring in maybe their expertise, people bring in their experience, and just simply their support as well. You know, it's not like, oh, right, you've got your little job branch, well, fuck off and do it yourself because, you know, we're not interested. It's not like that at all. I'm sorry if it kind of came across that way.
The next one, which we could probably talk at length about, but the relationship with larger unions.
Yeah, it's a big question in some ways. Obviously, the position of the IWW is that we organise independently, greenfield stuff, yeah, but we're also dual carding. I'm a dual carder, for example. So we work within the existing unions to build, if you like, IWW-type structures and organisations within the unions as much as it is possible to do so, to democratise union branches and so forth at a local level, etc, etc. We don't go out of our way to pick fights in any way with the trade union movement because they're really big and hairy looking. But we do sometimes come into a certain amount of conflict. We do not cross other unions' picket lines. We support other unions in struggle. Absolutely. Whether they do in return, well, we're finding that we are building some fairly good relationships with certain unions, and some other unions are being slightly less helpful.
Yeah. Destroying organising campaigns in some cases.
And what you sometimes find, what we found in an organising campaign a while ago, was that if you start organising somewhere and it looks like it could actually take off, you'll sometimes get the boss will invite unions that will remain nameless, GMB,
UC, back to
in to basically stop it, to sort of like come in and kind of take the reins, as it were, and be sensible.
Because they'd rather have them than the IWW in.
So even when we don't organise people, people getting organised, strangely, somebody else.
This man's question at the back, which I'm not sure what if the IWW or the two lads have a position on it, but the mainstream unions and the leadership and what, if anything, can be done?
Yeah, it's a big, massive question. And I know that the Independent Workers Union, of which I believe you're members, right, have taken a position that you're going to fight outside not the main mainstream unions. And that, for the most part, is our position as well. It is a dire situation, and what you'll often hear, and I'm sure you've heard yourselves, is people on the left will say, "Ah, but you're splitting the working class. Right? You're taking the people out of the unions. What was a classic one is letting the leadership off the hook." Yeah, it's a classic kind of lefty line. But we don't see it that way at all. If you actually look at other countries as well, sort of France and Italy and stuff, where there are small, granted, militant or radical unions, they actually set the pace, and they drag sometimes the other unions behind them. Yeah, they pressurise the leadership that way, not by actually being within those unions. Mm. And we see, although we think there's a place for pressurising within the unions too, just through the dual crowd thing, but we think that, that is the case. When and if indeed the IWW grow to mass proportions, then we think there will be a lot of left talk and kind of left action to some extent from the leaderships of the trade unions. Yeah. If they can't crush us, they'll try and co-opt us. Mm-hmm. I think
on that subject as well, I mean, that has been the interesting thing as we've grown in recent years and had a much bigger reputation, how other left groups have reacted to us. Because in the past we were very often just dismissed as, "Oh, you're just a bunch of pointless radicals, you have no connection with actual working people." Then when we're organising and winning stuff for people in workplaces, people then start to be interested and being like, "Well, okay, maybe you're all right then," and it's the interesting the reaction we've had from certain political organisations, I guess.
Eve's question then, any case studies of casual employees being organised?
Yeah, well, we've kind of got a strike going on just at the moment. It's involving casualised workers, not in Britain, but in the United States of America.
Grand Rapids, isn't it?
Grand Rapids, right. Yeah. So, I think the thing is, if we're not able to organise casual workers, or casualised labour, if you like, then we're in a lot of problems.
Especially seeing as that's our history as well.
Yeah.
So that's why the IWW was founded, to organise exactly those people.
And part of this idea of like taking the union with you wherever you go is part of that as well. I think that's very central to it. Is the idea, you're not in the union when you're in work or a specific workplace, but you carry the card wherever you go. You're like a walking organiser, as a roving organiser, as it were. So if you're in different places at different times, you're still in the union, and you may be meeting up with other people that are in the union too, although they might have been in a different branch somewhere else at different times. I think it's a big challenge.
Yeah.
And I think the mainstream trade unions, in this country at least, we're always kind of, well, sorry, Scotland, from Scotland. In Britain, they're, you know, at least 15, 20 years behind some of the stuff that's going on in the United States. And there are kind of these kind of open source kind of union ideas, minority unionism that's based on just a relationship with almost like a website and stuff. There's some interesting weird
stuff. Among casual archaeology workers, Facebook, there's a Facebook group, and it's had hundreds of people who are like, and it's a lot of it's at kind of that stage of kind of just consciousness raising and bitching about like the shit conditions and then trying to move towards organising. But there's a lot of issues, obviously, people like get blacklisted because they're known to be political or they're known to be like
Now those people can be very easily picked off as well. I mean, we've got a thing in Glasgow called the Precarious Workers Group, and that's really a Facebook group that's at that kind of level, and we're kind of trying to draw them into the IWW to sort of, you know, get a more organised approach, basically.
Did you want to come in again?
It was sort of, I can't remember who asked the question about what we're doing to build an alternative. Actually, to be honest, I mean, that's exactly what we are, like what we are doing, you know, is talking about the IWW has very often been the alternative, especially in the States where it had a much larger membership, but now in the UK it is as well, in Germany, Norway, you know, we've got a very quickly expanding membership. And one of the things I wanted to talk about today before everyone starts leaving and stuff, is I've had quite a few people coming up to me and talking to me over the few days that I've been here about starting an IWW branch here in Dublin. So I would encourage anyone who's interested, who wants to talk more about the IWW, come grab myself or Deck at some point. But what I'll do is I'll leave my notepad here at the front, and if anyone wants to jot down their email address, then one of us will get in touch with you and talk to you about the IWW if you want to know more, or if you want to help get a branch started here in Dublin. And I would say that's definitely something for everyone to consider, regardless of whether you're in a mainstream union yourself at the minute, because it is a good opportunity to dual card and to connect with other workers in other unions. But also for those of you who aren't in unions, who may be in an unorganised workplace, I'd really encourage you to join, and we can help you get onto organiser training and stuff like that, so that we can show you the solidarity unionism model in action. I think that's all I need to say now.
Thanks, guys. We're out of time. Thanks, everybody.
This audio is the Organising the Unorganised session of the Dublin Anarchist Book Fair 2013. In the session, we look at some practical examples and lessons to be learned from two union organising drives among the unorganised. You will find more audio from the Dublin Anarchist Book Fair at www.wsm.ie/anarchist-bookfair.